Chapter 8. The Crossing. The centurion commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. The Acts of the Apostles, chapter 27. The top of the sandy bank was a good 6 feet above the water. From where they sat, the rabbits could look straight ahead upstream and downstream to their left. Evidently, there were nesting holes in the sheer face below them, for as the light grew, they saw 3 or 4 martens dart out over the stream and away into the fields beyond. In a short time, one returned with his beak full, and they could hear the nestlings squeaking as he flew out of sight beneath their feet. The bank did not extend far in either direction. Upstream, it sloped down to a grassy path between the trees and the water. This followed the line of the river, which ran straight from almost as far away as they could see, flowing smoothly without fords, gravel shallows, or plank bridges. Immediately below them lay a wide pool, and here the water was almost still. Away to their left, the bank sloped down again into clumps of alder, among which the stream could be heard chattering over gravel. There was a glimpse of barbed wire stretched across the water, and they guessed that this must surround a cattle wade, like the one in the little brook near the home warren. Hazel looked at the path upstream. "There's grass down there," he said. "Let's go and feed." They scrambled down the bank and set to nibbling beside the water. Between them and the stream itself stood half-grown clumps of purple loosestrife and fleabane, which would not flower for nearly 2 months yet. The only blooms were a few early meadowsweet and a patch of pink butterbur. Looking back at the face of the bank, they could see that it was in fact dotted thickly with martens' holes. There was a narrow foreshore at the foot of the little cliff, and this was littered with the rubbish of the colony, sticks, droppings, feathers, a broken egg, and a dead nestling or two. The martens were now coming and going in numbers over the water. Hazel moved close to Fiver and quietly edged him away from the others, feeding as he went. When they were a little way off and half concealed by a patch of reeds, he said, "Are you sure we've got to cross the river, Fiver? What about going along the bank one way or the other?"
"No, we need to cross the river, Hazel, so that we can get into those fields and on beyond them too. I know what we ought to be looking for. A high, lonely place with dry soil, where rabbits can see and hear all round, and men hardly ever come. Wouldn't that be worth a journey?"
"Yes, of course it would. But is there such a place?"
"Not near a river. I needn't tell you that. But if you cross a river, you start going up again, don't you? We ought to be on the top and in the open. But Fiver, I think they may refuse to go much further. And then again, you say all this, and yet you say you're too tired to swim. I can rest, Hazel, but Pipkin's in a pretty bad way. I think he's injured. We may have to stay here half the day."
"Well, let's go and talk to the others. They may not mind staying. It's crossing they're not going to fancy, unless something frightens them into it." As soon as they had made their way back, Bigwig came across them from the bushes at the edge of the path.
"I was wondering where you'd got to," he said to Hazel. "Are you ready to move on?"
"No, I'm not,"
answered Hazel firmly.
"I think we ought to stay here until Neafrith. That'll give everyone a chance to rest, and then we can swim across to those fields."
Bigwig was about to reply, but Blackberry spoke first.
"Bigwig," he said, "why don't you swim over now, and then go out into the field and have a look round? The wood may not stretch very far one way or the other. You could see from there, and then we might know which would be the best way to go."
"Oh, well," said Bigwig rather grudgingly, "I suppose there's some sense in that. I'll swim the Embriah River as many times as you like. Always glad to oblige."
Without the slightest hesitation, he took 2 hops to the water, waded in, and swam across the deep, still pool. They watched him pull himself out beside a flowering clump of figwort, gripping one of the tough stems in his teeth, shake a shower of drops out of his fur, and scutter into the alder bushes. A moment later, between the nut trees, they saw him running off into the field.
"I'm glad he's with us,"
said Hazel to Silver. Again he thought wryly of the Threera. He's the fellow to find out all we need to know. Oh, I say, look, he's coming back already.
Bigwig was racing back across the field, looking more agitated than he had at any time since the encounter with Captain Holly. He ran into the water almost headlong and paddled over fast, leaving an arrowhead ripple on the calm brown surface. He was speaking as he jerked himself out on the sandy foreshore.
"Well, Hazel, if I were you, I shouldn't wait until Neafrith. I should go now. In fact, I think you'll have to."
"Why?" asked Hazel.
"There's a large dog loose in the wood."
Hazel started. "What?" he said. "How do you know?"
"When you get into the field, you can see the wood sloping down to the river. Parts of it are open. I saw the dog crossing a clearing. It was trailing a chain, so it must have broken loose. It may be on the Lendry's scent, but the Lendry will be underground by now. What do you think will happen when it picks up our scent, running from one side of the wood to the other with dew on it? Come on, let's get over quickly."
Hazel felt at a loss. In front of him stood Bigwig, sodden, wet, undaunted, single-minded, the very picture of decision. At his shoulder was Fiver, silent and twitching. He saw Blackberry watching him intently, waiting for his lead and disregarding Bigwig's. Then he looked at Pipkin, huddled into a fold of sand, more panic-stricken and helpless than any rabbit he had ever seen. At this moment, up in the wood, there broke out an excited yelping and a jay began to scold. Hazel spoke through a kind of light-headed trance.
"Well, you'd better get on then," he said. "And anyone else who wants to? Personally, I'm going to wait until Fiver and Pipkin are fit to tackle it."
"You silly blockhead," cried Bigwig. "We'll all be finished. We'll—"
"Don't stamp about," said Hazel. "You may be heard. What do you suggest then?"
"Suggest? There's no suggesting to be done. Those who can swim, swim. The others will have to stay here and hope for the best. The dog may not come."
"I'm afraid that won't do for me. I got Pipkin into this, and I'm going to get him out."
"Well, you didn't get Fiver into it, did you? He got you into it."
Hazel could not help noticing with reluctant admiration that although Bigwig had lost his temper, he was apparently in no hurry on his own account and seemed less frightened than any of them. Looking round for Blackberry, he saw that he had left them and was up at the top of the pool where the narrow beach tailed away into a gravel spit. His paws were half buried in the wet gravel and he was nosing at something large and flat on the waterline. It looked like a piece of wood.
"Blackberry," he said, "can you come back here a moment?"
Blackberry looked up, tugged out his paws and ran back.
"Hazel," he said quickly, "that's a piece of flat wood. Like that piece that closed the gap by the green loose above the warren, you remember? It must have drifted down the river. So it floats. We could put Fiver and Pipkin on it and make it float again. It might go across the river. Can you understand?"
Hazel had no idea what he meant. Blackberry's flood of apparent nonsense only seemed to draw tighter the mesh of danger and bewilderment. As though Bigwig's angry impatience, Pipkin's terror, and the approaching dog were not enough to contend with, the cleverest rabbit among them had evidently gone out of his mind. He felt close to despair.
"Frithra, yes, I see,"
said an excited voice at his ear. It was Fiver.
"Quick, Hazel, don't wait. Come on and bring Pipkin."
It was Blackberry who bullied the stupefied Pipkin to his feet and forced him to limp the few yards to the gravel spit. The piece of wood, hardly bigger than a large rhubarb leaf, was lightly aground. Blackberry almost drove Pipkin onto it with his claws. Pipkin crouched, shivering, and Fiver followed him aboard.
"Who's strong?" said Blackberry. "Bigwig, Silver, push it out!"
No one obeyed him. All squatted, puzzled and uncertain. Blackberry buried his nose in the gravel under the landward edge of the board and raised it, pushing. The board tipped. Pipkin squealed and Fiver lowered his head and splayed his claws. Then the board righted itself and drifted out a few feet into the pool with the two rabbits hunched upon it, rigid and motionless. It rotated slowly and they found themselves staring back at their comrades.
"Frith and Inley," said Dandelion. "They're sitting on the water. Why don't they sink?" "They're sitting on the wood, and the wood floats, can't you see?" said Blackberry. "Now, we swim over ourselves. Can we start, Hazel?"
During the last few minutes, Hazel had been as near to losing his head as he was ever to come. He had been at his wits' end, with no reply to Bigwig's scornful impatience except his readiness to risk his own life in company with Fiver and Pipkin. He still could not understand what had happened, but at least he realized that Blackberry wanted him to show authority. His head cleared.
"Swim," he said. "Everybody swim!"
He watched them as they went in. Dandelion swam as well as he ran, swiftly and easily. Silver, too, was strong. The others paddled and scrambled over somehow, and as they began to reach the other side, Hazel plunged. The cold water penetrated his fur almost at once. His breath came short, and as his head went under, he could hear a faint grating of gravel along the bottom. He paddled across awkwardly, his head tilted high out of the water, and made for the figwort. As he pulled himself out, he looked around among the sopping rabbits in the alders.
"Where's Bigwig?" he asked. "Behind you!"
answered Blackberry, his teeth chattering. Bigwig was still in the water, on the other side of the pool. He had swum to the raft, put his head against it, and was pushing it forward with heavy thrusts of his back legs.
"Keep still,"
Hazel heard him say in a quick, gulping voice. Then he sank, but a moment later he was up again and had thrust his head over the back of the board. As he kicked and struggled, it tilted and then, while the rabbits watched from the bank, moved slowly across the pool and grounded on the opposite side. Fiver pushed Pipkin onto the stones, and Bigwig waded out beside them, shivering and breathless.
"I got the idea once Blackberry had shown us," he said. "But it's hard to push it when you're in the water. I hope it's not long to sunrise. I'm cold. Let's get on."
There was no sign of the dog as they made haste through the alders and up the field to the first hedgerow. Most of them had not understood Blackberry's discovery of the raft and at once forgot it. Fiver, however, came over to where Blackberry was lying against the stem of a blackthorn in the hedge.
"You saved Pipkin and me, didn't you?" he said. "I don't think Pipkin's got any idea what really happened, but I have."
"I admit it was a good idea," replied Blackberry. "Let's remember it. It might come in handy again sometime."